Welcome back to More Than Tracy Turnblad, the podcast about fat representation in entertainment. I am Abby Rose Morris, your host, and today I am interviewing Mallory Kidd, who is a Broadway dresser. She's a wardrobe, hair, and makeup technician. We have an awesome conversation all about costuming, how to be costumed, how to communicate with your costumers. It's fantastic. For any performers listening to this, these are things that absolutely blew my mind, never even occurred to me that I could advocate for myself, and also knowing, you know, their perspective on it was so helpful for me. So I am so excited for you guys to hear that. But first, I want to talk a little bit about some TikTok discourse I've seen happening in the past couple weeks, all about the millennials versus Gen Z and the fashion trends, and how so many of the fashion trends from the early 2000s that are coming back now were just kind of rooted in fat phobia and in objectifying women's bodies, and the thinner the better. So like, you had your low-rise jeans that people are talking about a lot that were really just only looked good on really skinny women. But it got me thinking a lot about how millennials and Gen Zers have grown up with slightly different ideas about body size. The fat phobia is still there. The ideas are still there. They're just buried under the surface a lot more, I think, these days than they were for millennials and even when I was growing up. And I think I'm in a unique position to talk about this because I'm like squarely in between Gen Z and millennial. Like, I was born in 1996, so depending on who you ask, it's different. And so I grew up, you know, in the early 2000s, and there was so much fat phobia at that time. You had your like obesity epidemic rhetoric, like crazy. You had Michelle Obama. Then once Barack Obama took office, she had her whole like campaign. It was Let's Move, I think, her Let's Move campaign to like end childhood obesity. And the food pyramid was all kinds of fucked up. And that's what we were learning in school. Like, it was just such a mess. And then you had the media, which was so fat phobic back then, back in the 90s, early 2000s. I mean, I watch an episode of Friends now and I am shocked, because those are things that you can't really say anymore. I mean, I guess people do, but like, they get shit for it a lot of the time. And, you know, back in the day, it was just so universally accepted truth that fat meant ugly, unlovable, could not be beautiful, could not be happy. Like, things that if you said, oh yeah, all fat people are ugly and unlovable now, people would be like, no, fuck you, fat is beautiful, right? But back in the day, it was so accepted. It was just kind of was like the foundation of every joke. Like, every comedy had that fat character who would fall over and eat food. And it was so much more prevalent than it is today, even though we still do have those characters. And I would say around like the 2010s, it started to shift. Not in media as much, but like, the culture started to embrace body positivity because it became mainstream, because we realized it was marketable, right? So body positivity became this big counter movement that people are familiar with. And kids who are growing up with that now know what it is. I didn't know what it was. Like, I am almost Gen Z and I didn't know what it was. And I cannot imagine how much different it must be for kids growing up now. Not that there is not fat phobia, not that there are not lots of spaces in the internet that are telling you to drink lemon water every day to lose weight or shit like that. But then you have like, you have Abby Sharp making videos to tell you not to do that or that it doesn't work. And you have body positive influencers. You see people on the internet living their lives happily in fat bodies. And when I was a kid, we did not, because we did not have the internet. And when you don't see fat people living their lives and doing the things that we are told by mainstream media fat people can't do, like, when you're not seeing fat people as whole people in the media, and the media is all you have, it just gets really easy to believe TV and movies and books and magazines Especially if you don't have any fat people in your life, or if all the fat people you know have dedicated their entire lives to not being fat anymore. I mean, I am speaking for myself. Probably other people who are exactly my age might have had the internet sooner, but my family's always been like 4 years behind technologically. So while everyone else was watching DVDs, we were still having like a VCR. We were still listening to cassette tapes. I did not get a cell phone until ninth grade. I did not get a smartphone until senior year of high school, but I digress. So we didn't have as much internet back then. People older than me certainly didn't. And I mean, I didn't really have like the ability to go on the internet, like social media, and see pictures of other people. I would say really until high school. And that's also kind of when the body positive movement started to take off more. So it was honestly really jarring to go from this culture where fat phobia just was underscoring everything, which it still is to a degree, but there was just no counter movement for it, to then suddenly there being this counter movement that says, love yourself, you're still beautiful, people will still want you, you still have value, even if you're not as thin. And also the standards have shifted too. So like, frankly, I look back on times when I thought I was fat when I was like in middle school, and I'm just embarrassed now about calling myself fat. But the truth is, back in that time, back when I was growing up, like size 8 was considered fat. You just got this message that anything above a size 2 or 4 was absolutely unacceptable. And then growing up, and as the body positivity movement gains traction, I gain more weight. And so the weird thing is, I do not feel that, and granted, I'm still on the smaller end of fat. Like, I do not feel that I am treated any worse than I was when I was a few sizes smaller. Anyway, for all the failings of the body positivity movement, and yes, there are many, I do want to acknowledge that it exists in the mainstream now. The range of acceptable sizes has widened a bit. I am grateful for the progress we have made, even though it's so far from enough. And the fact that the culture has shifted a bit gives me hope that more progress is ahead, especially now that we have a generation who has grown up with body positivity as part of the cultural lexicon. So thank you for listening to my TikTok-inspired rant. And now let's chat with Mallory Kidd. So welcome, Mallory.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my God, of course. So let's get started.
Awesome.
Tell me a little about yourself and your career path and how you got to where you are.
Yeah. So I am mostly based in the world of wardrobe. However, I kind of found a side avenue in hair and makeup on accident. I went to college at Metro State University in Denver, Colorado. And got my BFA there in costuming. And then one time, like one spring, my teacher was like, hey, you should go learn how to do hair and makeup because we don't have anybody who does that. So I went and did an internship about halfway through college. And then she was like, great, you can do hair and makeup for our shows now. And I'm like, okay. And granted, she was very skilled as well, but she didn't have like a student to do the heavy lifting. So that's how I fell into that. Graduated in 2017 and promptly, maybe a little bit irresponsibly, moved out to New York City.
I relate to that.
Yeah. So I have been in New York City for 3 years. I have been, you know, before March 12th, I had been working very consistently, and I'd been working all over the city, both in wardrobe and hair, as well as both on and off Broadway. I was swinging at 3 different Broadway shows before we shut down. And I was actually in the works to do hair and makeup supervisor for a brand new musical that was coming to off Broadway that was supposed to start rehearsals like the week of the shutdown. So damn. Fingers crossed, we've still been getting some updates that like they're still bringing it to New York. So I'm hoping that'll be my first project whenever we get back.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so will you talk a little bit about what it's like to swing and how that works for someone who works in wardrobe or wherever you're swinging.
Absolutely. So it's similar but different to performer. So performers are contracted with one show. They learn, you know, X amount of roles within that show, and they stay with that company exclusively. Technician swinging, so that goes for every position you can think of. Wardrobe, hair, lighting, deck crew, sound, all of it all have swings. But we are not contracted with one show. So you just get, I mean, you have a contract with them, but they are not obligated to give you that swing every time somebody is sick or swinging up or whatever. So for example, I swing at Phantom of the Opera, Ain't Too Proud, and Rock of Ages, which is technically off Broadway. It's in the New World stages. And we still learn different tracks. So for every track you see on stage, there is definitely a track or three off stage. So we go in, we get usually one show to follow, one show to like do what we feel confident in. And then, you know, the dresser will do the more complicated ones that we want to see another time. And usually you should be able to do it on your own by the third show where you're doing it and the dresser is following you. Sometimes if you're lucky and that goes kind of rough, they'll give you a fourth. But ideally you should be able to learn a show in three shows, which is insane.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think the first one is always the hardest. My first one was at Phantom of the Opera and I was like, I don't understand this show. And you know, it's Phantom, like everybody knows that show. And I was still just like, I don't understand this show. I don't understand
There's
where I'm
so
going.
Much. So many costumes, so much going on.
It's a massive show.
I was just going to say, my uncle played in the Pit of Phantom for 30 years. He's been doing it since the beginning and just retired like this month.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, oh my God, you guys are working near each other. And he showed me the costume room backstage before. Mm-hmm. And wow. And the wig room. And it's insane.
Right. And that's only like such a small portion of it, because in big shows like that, the costumes don't always live in one place. Like one actor's costume might have their starting show costume is in their dressing room. Their second costume lives on stage left. Their third is on stage right. Their fourth is in the basement. And then, you know, the fifth might just be who knows where. So they're all over the theater. Unlike when you think of community theaters, smaller theaters, most of the time, all the costumes live in their dressing rooms, not in big Broadway shows. They live where their quick changes are. So that was also another thing of like, you have this rack and then there's like 12 names on it. And you're like, supposedly I'm dressing Jack Black and there's like a bajillion names on here. And I'm going to have to try and find it in that little crevice. I'm like, oh, there's his costume. Right. It's that black suit, not that black suit. It's insane. Wow. But I love it. I think right now I cover 11 different tracks at three different shows. Maybe 12. I don't remember anymore. So it's definitely, it's a brain stretch, but man, was my brain strong at the peak of swinging. Yeah.
I bet. So let's talk about size, fat phobia, sizeism. Mm-hmm. How have you seen this show up in your work and in your experiences as a theatrical technician?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, it shows up all the time, every day. You know, people who've been wearing the same costume for 10 years will go, oh my God, I'm going to get in trouble because my costume, like I need a looser rung put on it or something. Or one of the worst things I've ever heard said, and so I'm going to kind of be vague to protect the production and the actor and whatnot, but was in a musical that I was working. It was a brand new show, and the wardrobe supervisor and the designer were having a conversation about the leading lady, who was very petite. But I mean, petite in the sense of like, she's probably 5'1", but also very, very tiny in size. And they just kept saying, well, she doesn't look like a leading lady. Oh, that dress makes her look too round. Ugh, that dress isn't very ingenue. Ugh, it just swallows her. Ugh, we can't get her to stand out on stage. And they were like, and they kept arguing about her wig that she was doing. They were like, well, that's too big. And that makes her face look too round. And, you know, all these things that I was like, there's nothing in this show. I mean, it was just a character in a fantasy world. Size and weight had nothing to do with it. And yet they were obsessed with getting this quote unquote look that an ingenue has.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank God this conversation was had in private, but you could see it kind of like ripping at her soul every time. Like, there was one day in one 8-hour stretch, she went through 3 dresses for this like one final scene or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just so frustrating to be like, you're talking about this girl who's like maybe half my size.
Uh-huh.
And it just made me feel like crap. And I was, you know, as dressers, we definitely are the caretakers of the actors. You know, we see them mm-hmm. at their literal most vulnerable and stripped down. And we are also the ones who, if they had a rough moment on stage, if they hurt themselves, if they're upset about something, we're the ones who hear about it first. And like, sometimes it won't even go to stage management. Because sometimes it's just like, oh, that sounded like crap, or oh, I ate too much today, so I feel so fat in my costume, which is mm-hmm. awful verbiage.
Right.
You know, we're the ones who hear that, and we're the ones who kind of absorb all of that energy. So anytime she had to put on a new costume, I had to do it with such kind of tact, where I was like, okay, we're going to put you in another dress now. And it was just so disheartening to see her be like, I don't know what I can change about myself. And I was like, what they're looking for, you can't change in 5 minutes. Therefore, they shouldn't even want to change it at all.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just amazing how often I've heard actresses go, the designer is not listening to what I'm saying. Like, I had one actress, beautiful Black woman, and not even like fat. Like, honestly, she just had gorgeous curves, but like still pretty standard size in the pants. Her top was probably mm-hmm. a smaller medium, but she had hips like many Black women do. And the designer was a white male, and everything he was putting her in, she was like, I can't like move my legs in this, and I can't get them up quickly or get them off quickly in quick changes. So we were busting open some of the costumes because he wanted this specific figure. And we were like, that figure is conducive for like a photo or a runway, but not for theater. And she was like, he doesn't understand what it's like to have hips.
Right.
And as much as we wish it wasn't true, costuming and wardrobing is still, when it comes to like the higher positions, a very male dominated position.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating, because when you look at like, who do we have more of in any given show? If you're not doing Newsies, mm-hmm. you have more women than men. And 9 times out of 10, the women's costumes are way more complicated and related to the body shape than the men's are mm-hmm. as well. And a man can do as much research as he wants, just like we could do as much research about men as we want. You can't understand it if you haven't lived some sort of experience in it.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest part about all of this, is as much as we want to educate others, unless they are coming from a place of empathy, they can only sympathize so much.
You really have to want to do it. Like, you have to want to empathize mm-hmm. with people.
Yeah. It's crazy, you know, and that's just from like the design aspect. That's mm-hmm. not even from actor on actor kind of conversations.
Let's talk about actor on actor conversations.
That, I mean, that feels like something different. So I will say, I think I have never done a show with a woman in the ensemble who was anywhere near my size.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll preface for the listeners, because this is an audio podcast, I'm a size 14. I'm a size 12 if I really work at it. But, you know, most of the time I just accept that I'm a size 14. I recently had a breast reduction. I am always been very large chested until the pandemic. So I have never worked on a show, and I've worked on a lot of theater. Mm-hmm. I have done a production of Hairspray. And you know how many curvy people there are on that show? 2. Maybe 3 if Maybelle is a curvy Black woman. And I'm trying to make sure that is not incorrect. And I've done a lot of shows, but I can't think of a single show, like even in college.
Uh-huh.
Unless I was in the production in college, because I did act a little bit in college. Mm-hmm. There was nobody near my size. And when I was in shows in college, they had a unique time dressing me as well.
I'm sure they did. Let's talk about that. So how have your experiences from when you were performing influenced how you treat actors, and especially actors in larger bodies, as a dresser?
Yeah. There's one very specific show I can think of that I did in college where somehow it was really weird. I got cast as the lead, who was this cute little ingenue. She ends up being pregnant about halfway through the show. So, like, you know, most of the costumes were very comfortable. I did not care, you know, whatever. But there was one look that they required me to wear, which was just blue skinny jeans and like a light pink V-neck t-shirt, like female fitted t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And I mean, back then, I wish I would have appreciated the body I had back then, back when I thought it was, you know, fat or whatever term you want to use. This t-shirt just gave me so much anxiety. And it was a student designer and I loved her. Her and I were in the same program together. So, you know, I was an actor coming from a technical theater background. I was working on the costumes in the costume shop that I was in.
Right. The show that I was That's in. So funny.
So it was this one costume. And I told her, I was like, hey, I totally get your vision here, but like, I don't like the way it looks on me. She's like, oh, you look great. And what I wish I would have had the knowledge to say then that, like, now I know how to put into words now is, thank you. I know I'm cute. However, I feel self-conscious. So therefore, my brain is going to be focusing on the way I hold my body, the way I hold my props,
yes,
the way I look in this costume with stage lights hitting it, as opposed to all the other things you're supposed to think about when you're on stage.
100%.
You know, like there's one photo of me in that costume, and it's one of my favorite photos that's ever been taken of me on stage. But I have this reusable grocery bag all the way in front of my stomach, like I'm trying to hide a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And that was not part of the script, even though my character was pregnant. I just felt so uncomfortable was that was how I compensated with this discomfort.
I've been so guilty of that.
Right. And so, and that's something that like I have become in my career such a mama bear when it comes to my actors. Like my actors come above anything else. And I will make sure that like, as long as they're not nasty to me, I will always make sure that they are taken care of and advocated for because they're so not in the design mm-hmm. room, in the director, they're not advocating for the individual actor. They're advocating for their vision.
Right.
Which I totally understand. But if somebody's going to be advocating for that side of the production, then somebody needs to be advocating for the person who's bringing that to life.
For sure.
And so it's a simple conversation of, you know, when it's always one-on-one. I would never have these conversations in front of their fellow actors or any other technicians of being, hey, your body language is telling me something's not all right. How can I help you feel more comfortable? And some women that might just be like, I need a better bra. I need Spanx. Yeah. Or some women is just like, this dress is constricting my performance, you know, and that's important. That's the easiest. And I don't want to call it a cop-out, but it really is. If you feel uncomfortable in a costume, it's usually because it's too tight. If you straight up say this costume is like restricting my performative abilities,
yes,
boom, done, they will switch it.
Good to know.
And it seems so silly, but they, you know, that's the part of the vision that they won't sacrifice. They'll sacrifice your comfortability in like your body, but like mm-hmm. if you can't do the weird actions that they told you to do, they're gonna either alter the crap out of that costume or they are going to switch
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And coming from the wardrobe perspective, you know, I can absolutely help you with that. I can be like, oh, hey, you know, if let's say some weird reason they're not having you wear a bra in a costume, but you want to wear a bra, just being like, you know, when we quick change, it's not completely secluded. So she needs to wear a bra underneath because it's not a private changing booth, mm-hmm. you know, and I can learn how to advocate for you. And there have been multiple times where I've put my own career at risk at the sake of my actors.
Yeah.
Because I know what that's like to not have somebody advocating for you and listening to you. And, you know, my actors, like I said, are not, let's call them standard sizes. I don't like the term skinny. So women who are standard sizes, which I would say is size 8 and under, is usually about where I put it. But yeah, so I think the actor experience, and like at the same time, as much as I will advocate for my actors, I will never ask them in public, hey, what size? Because like I'm in charge in wardrobe. I'm in charge mm-hmm. of, if it's a new show, getting their undergarments. So what size underwear are you? What size bra? I will never ask that in person. I'll either shoot them a text. I'll say, hey, write it down here, or I'll ask them one-on-one.
Yeah.
You know, and I always say like, this does not leave my binder or my mind. You know, I'm the only one who knows this for my needs to make sure that you're comfortable. But at the same time, it's been interesting kind of calling actors, because so many times we are just wallflowers and we're just doing our jobs and they're interacting with each other. But when I have an actor be like, "Oh, I feel so fat today," I'm like, "Nah, girl, you bloated. You don't, fat is not a feeling." That's been my favorite thing, of just being like, "Fat is not a feeling. You just feel bloated. You feel a little lazy. All of those are feelings."
Yeah.
And you know, you play it off as like a joking behavior, because they're not saying, "Oh my God, you're so fat." It shouldn't be, it should not be
right.
offensive to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they don't mean it that way.
Yeah.
And they just need to know what language is going to make it come across like that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been babysitting my 13-year-old, who is built like a toothpick because she's just barely starting her puberty journey, was telling me that she was like, "Oh my God, this game burns X amount of calories." And I was like, no. You are too young to be even thinking about calories. And I know she thinks about her body all the time. And like, you just want to shake them, but you can't. And so all you can do is hope to recondition them and hope to provide a positive experience. And like,
right,
we can still do that. Like, I still do that for my actors who are 30, 40, 50 years old, you know? And I think it's also really important. I don't know if you've touched on this before, but it's really important to say, yes, I am speaking from the female experience. However, men have just as much scrutiny about their bodies.
Yep.
You know, they may be able to get away with more and maybe are not noticed quite as much. But like, on the other end of the spectrum, when I was in college, we were doing a production where a boy, our lead, had to be shirtless. And the director said, "Why is he so pasty?" And I was like, I was in the house with him, and I was like, "It's because it's his skin tone."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Well, he doesn't look very masculine. Can you like put some abs on him?" And so I had to have the conversation with him, because it was a show that I was designing makeup for. And I was like, "Hey, we have to airbrush some contour onto your abs." And like, it's a harsh way of telling someone like, you're not bulked up enough. You're not, you know, you're too skinny. You look too young or whatever. You don't look masculine enough. And I mean, the way I'm pretty sure I phrased it was, which is not a lie, I will say this is not a lie, this was just a way of helping him cope. The lighting was really washing him out, because our skin absorbs light. It does not bounce light off. We can come off as a little translucent or washed out. So we're putting on shadows to encourage the lighting to bounce off those shadows, to create those shadows that are already there. Because like, he was still muscular. He was just a little wiry.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're just trying to heighten those shadows that are already there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a hard conversation to have with someone. Same thing goes with someone's face. Your face can look really kind of two-dimensional, flat and washed out without the right kind of makeup. But telling someone we need to put more contour or bronzer under your cheekbones and jawline can come off as like, "Hey, you look too round and fat on stage." And that's not the case. We're just defining your features that we already have there.
Yeah.
We're not putting you in drag. We're not putting you in special effects. We're not adding any prosthetics. We're just defining what's already there. We're not changing anything.
Yeah. And it's great that there are ways to, you know, phrase this without making actors uncomfortable and then inhibiting their self-esteem, which does inhibit their ability to do their job. So I have a question from my own experience that I'm curious about.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, when you're in a production, be it educational, you know, community, whatever, I had this in high school a lot and in college sometimes too, where they have certain costumes that they really want you to fit into. Mm-hmm. How do you advocate for yourself in a situation where it seems like they are getting mad at you for not fitting into the costumes they already have?
Right. So like, if you've got, you're doing Grease and you bought a standard package or whatever of poodle skirts and prom dresses.
Like literally this happened to me in Grease.
Right?
My director at high school, she had done it at the neighboring high school the year before, and she wanted to reuse everything. And I found a dress for like the student scenes that fit me, but none of the party dresses fit me. And it was hell. And she made me try on the same dresses like 3 or 4 different times. And then when they didn't fit, she let me bring something from home that she also made clear was not her first choice. But like,
dude, I had the same thing happen in high school. I mean, because like I said, I was an actor first.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things where it was like, I always, and again, I wish I would have appreciated the body I had in high school, but I was still super big chested, unlike all the other girls in my grade who, like, compared to my melons, must have had spider bites. I don't know, but it was like they'd never seen a real chest before. And so I was always, always, always going shopping for my own costumes, bringing my own options for home.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I look back at high school shows and I'm like, those were all from my closet. And that was part of high school sometimes, was like, yes, you did bring your own clothes. But it was also like, I'm like, well, they all got their costumes picked out for them. Mm-hmm. Why did I have to supplement with my own costumes?
Yeah.
I wasn't always the only one. It wasn't only the fat kids. I gotta say all of that, you know, just to cover all my bases. But going back to your question, oh God, I've seen it happen so many times. So I've worked at plenty of community theaters across the country as well. So I've worked at that level where packages are awesome. But if you're renting a package, no matter what, they're not going to fit like the other person, because like, they might be too short, they might be too long, they might fit perfect in the waist but not in the bust, and that can mm-hmm. be on anyone. And so you think of the iconic looks, like, let's say, like, Millie's flapper red dress,
right?
You know, let's God, what I would give to see a Millie that wasn't, you know, stick thin.
I'd like to audition, thank you.
Right. I know. It would make no, I mean, yes, it's the 20s, so it kind of makes a difference, but it also doesn't.
Yeah. It's like, you can suspend your disbelief enough.
Yeah. 100%. And flapper dresses look fine on a woman with curves. But anyway, so you think of that dress. Let's say you got cast as Millie in a production, and the production where they rented a package, the original Millie was a size 4. Both sizes are valid. Both sizes look great in that kind of costume, but to expect a fish to be able to fly when you throw it in the air instead of allowing it to excel in its own environment and just throwing it in a different environment is like setting it up to fail.
Yeah.
So taking the extra amount in your budget that you're definitely saving by buying a package and buying another piece, building a piece, you know, whatever, should be the designer in the shop's problem. It should never fall back on the actor.
Yes.
And I have seen that happen so many times in fittings where the designers get frustrated that the actor doesn't fit into what they pulled. And it's like, sorry, either do your job and alter it because you have an entire costume shop who can do those alterations for you. Give the project to somebody to build it because they'd have a ball building it. And if you're running out on time, that's, again, the designer's fault, not the actor's.
Yes.
The actors do not make the fitting schedule. The actors do not make the amount of time and scheduling that it takes to build a production.
Yeah.
And you know your actor and their sizes come with them as soon as they're cast.
Yes.
So a show might have been cast 3 months before. And if you see, oh, my Millie is a size 12, the package that I'm renting says that it's for a size 4. I know right away that I can at least guesstimate how much fabric it takes to build that dress.
Uh-huh.
I can make a mock-up in a standard size 12. You know, like, you can do all these things ahead of time. And I have seen it done successfully, which is why I'm saying you could totally do it, because I have seen productions. Like, when I worked, I will say that's a huge plus for the company Music Theater Wichita in Wichita, Kansas, is they stay so ahead of things. They use their own packages all the time because they've been around for 50 seasons.
Right.
So they have a lot of packages, but they're really good about being like, okay, we know we know roughly our actor sizes. We know things get fudged, things change, whatever. But we can pull within their range. We can build within their range and then tweak as necessary so that the bulk of our work is done way, way ahead of time, like multiple shows before, so that we don't feel like we're scrambling. We had that with Millie. We did Millie one summer, and the costumes and the package just were not the right sizes for our girls. And so we did end up building or pulling from other packages or renting from somewhere else. I don't remember. It might have been a combo of all three. And I just really appreciate that those designers and that shop manager were, you know, productive enough to go ahead and plan ahead for that, so that none of the women had to feel like walking out of your fitting, it wasn't like a failed prom dress try on.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, I at least tried on something that will fit.
Right.
Or trying on something that's too big is like one of the best things in the world.
Uh-huh.
Where you're like, oh my God, you can just take it in. Like, we don't get to do that. I rarely try on clothes where I'm like, oh, it's too big. I could take it in, because taking it in is so much easier than letting it out.
Right.
And that's also a thing where it's just like, we should have that opportunity too. We shouldn't have to like max out all the time.
Right.
And be like, there's no, like shopping at Target. Yes, I feel that's kind of why I have a hard time saying I am plus size or I'm fat, because I do know that like I can shop at Target to some extent. I can go in there. I can find a piece or two that will fit. There are women who could never do that at all.
Yeah.
You know, like, but it does still suck when it's like you've tried on 7 shirts that are all extra large and you're like, well, there's no up from here and those don't fit.
Right.
And,
I've totally been in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, do you remember in high school going to the mall with your friends and all friends got to try on all the cute stuff at like Abercrombie and Fitch? And you're like, I'll just look at the bracelet.
At the shoes. Yeah. I don't even like shoes as much as clothes. I also like would be like, okay, well, maybe the large will fit me. And like, maybe it would. Right. Or I'd like only try on clothes with stretchy fabrics or only things that didn't zip up in the back. And then hearing your friends while you're doing that be like, I feel so fat. And being like, bitch, the clothes in this store don't even fit me.
Right. I know. And it's something you, for some reason, we just accepted that we got used to. We got used to being the fat friend, which made us feel unsexy, which made us feel not like the leading character, even in our own lives.
Yes.
And it just, and there really wasn't that representation either to make us feel
for
otherwise.
Sure.
But
for
it's amazing at like what a young age your size plays into your
self-esteem,
your role in life, and yourself.
Yeah, and how you cast yourself in your life is huge. Mm-hmm. And that this is such a topic dear to my heart. I feel like that's been so present in my life. I remember when I first started dating my boyfriend and I was about to meet his family for the first time, I was like, I can't do this because I'm like miscast in the role of girlfriend. Like I literally was like, it's like someone's cast me as Juliet and the rehearsal process was great and they were really understanding and we put a new spin on Juliet that I was really proud of. And then the show opened and all I can think about is, oh, everyone's just going to say in the reviews, she's too fat to play Juliet.
Yeah. And I know it's so silly and I have been working so hard on it. Honestly, in quarantine, I have gone through the biggest body, if it's not dysmorphia, what would you call it when you're more accepting of seeing the body that you have?
Mm-hmm.
Body acceptance, I guess.
Yeah.
Than I've ever done in my entire life. But like the fact it still is still in there. When you said I have a boyfriend, I was like, oh, a girl my size has a boyfriend?
Oh my God, that's exactly how I used to feel.
Like how silly is that?
It still feels improbable. It has been a year and a half and still feels improbable.
I will say, so I know we're going to talk about like people or like roles that I've seen that have kind of shaped in media.
Mm-hmm.
The one of the biggest ones for me has always been, and like I think even on a like a subconscious level, because I've been watching the show for so long, is Sookie St. James from Gilmore Girls, because she never once, except when she was pregnant, felt fat or had a fat story.
Yes.
You know, sometimes she'd be like, I'm a beached whale.
Yes.
But that was just every pregnant woman has said that. And that was understandable. But otherwise, she was loved. She dated a lot. She did not just date Jackson. You know, mm-hmm. Lorelai told her how great she was. They would go shopping together and be happy about it, even though Lorelai is this like petite standard size and Sookie's not. There was never this comparison. And I just loved it.
Yeah, she had like her own personality.
Yeah.
She was like a person separate from, and she was a cook, but she didn't have an eating problem. She didn't eat all the time.
Right.
And that was so meaningful to me.
Yeah. She was just a chef. She was just a person who loves food. She was a best friend. She was a great comedic relief. Like, you know, you could say all these things about Sookie, but never once would you say she was the fat friend. She never had a storyline that was fat or anything like that. And like, I just rewatched Gilmore Girls when I had my surgery back in October. And it felt so good to just see her and Jackson. And like Jackson, he's also just like, you know, a bigger dude who's like not a male model, but he's still so sweet. And it was never about his physical insecurities
not at
either.
All. Never mentioned once.
And they were
once.
Just this happy, loving couple. And they were like one of the most healthy relationships on the show.
Oh, God. I would say the most healthy by far.
Yeah, probably.
Except for Lane and Dave. That... Lane and Dave forever.
Aww.
I will not be editing that out because everybody needs to know how passionate I am about Dave Rogalski. That's all.
Yes, because Lane ended up with the wrong guy. Whew,
oh,
that's
God.
Ugh,
that's another discussion. Ugh. Miss Patty and Babette also, I mean, they're like a little more like the character comedic relief, but they were like so sexual and so like just genuinely thriving. Babette and Maury might actually be the happiest couple on Gilmore Girls. It is funny, though, because I feel like a lot of Amy Sherman Palladino shows have a lot of fat phobia in them.
They do. And they have fat phobia and they have sex phobia. You know, they're not very sex positive shows. So you have these issues. But it was also the fact that she just cast a fat woman in a character that could have been played by a standard sized woman because it wouldn't have affected the role. The fact that she did that in the early 2000s where the term, I kid you not, heroin chic.
Oh, yeah.
Was like a common term to describe beauty was just important in itself. So, yeah, we could talk about how like the fact that Rory and Lorelai ate enough to make any human be unhealthily obese, you know, did nothing to their bodies. Sure, but like at the end of the day, it's like at least she didn't perpetuate those.
Suki definitely didn't.
Rory and Lorelai never once made those negative comments about their bodies.
Rory and Lorelai glorified binge eating, but not the fat character.
Yep. And they never, for being as small and standard as they were, they never complained about bodies either. They never said, oh, I feel so full. They were always just like, I'm going to eat until I'm full and I'm going to feel great about it. Which was so important for girls at that age of like 16 and Rory's size to see that like you are absolutely welcome to eat until you feel full.
Yes, I love that.
You know, so for as many issues as we can have with Gilmore Girls, I still think it did a lot of good.
I definitely agree.
And I other than that, I mean, I can't think of ever seeing myself on TV ever. And I am not even, totally like fat and plus size.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only time I've ever seen a character on stage who was plus sized was when I saw the Bring It On, the musical, the tour. Ryan Redman, is that her name? Right. Her character. And again, it was like, yeah, there was some jokes about her being fat or her being, you know, but more of the jokes was this white girl trying to do break dancing or whatever it was that they were trying to do. And I really loved that, like, she was this confident fat girl who, like, owned her fatness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this POC character who comes from a background that, like, glorifies curves and finds her so attractive. And, you know, it's frustrating that, like, all the white dudes made fun of her and a POC character was like, yeah, no, she's actually beautiful, you dumbasses. So, like, that's the only time I can think of seeing a character like me on stage, but it kind of sucked because, again, her storyline was about her overcoming her fatness.
Right, right. And being desirable, and that fixes the problem, which is tricky because, like, it's honestly a little misogynistic when you have, like, someone's entire self-esteem coming from a man finding her attractive for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And even if fat was unilaterally unattractive, which it isn't, but in a theoretical world where that is true and where fat people are just destined to be unloved, we still deserve to be treated with respect. Like, period. It doesn't have anything.
Right.
One does not have to do with the other. And I wish we would stop conflating them because you're just giving more value to the judgments of men.
Yeah. It's just so frustrating that I just can't even name one role. I could name so many roles that I would love to see a curvier girl in. And curvy can just mean anything. It can mean I can see a little bit of rolls. I can see that she has a chest and hips. You know, she could still have a smaller waist than I do. She could still be taller than I am. So her weight disperses very differently. Because you don't see tall girls in any capacity really anywhere either. You know, and it's and there are so many roles that I would love to see them in.
I'm going to ask you specifically about that now because I think this is a perfect time to do Cast Me Cowards. So what would you like to see, you know, a curvy woman playing or a man or anything?
Right. I need Disney to cast someone larger, like just larger than what they've done before. Like, I think Anna would be the cutest little curvy girl. And like, if Prince Eric can, or not Eric, I'm mixing up my Disney movies. If Prince Hans can lift that girl in those heavy ass petticoats, he can lift a girl who's got a couple extra pounds on her.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm like, girl, I did lifts in college. Like, we had to learn it. I was made to do it. And my dance teacher was like, no, you will lift her. And he did.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they can. And there's, and you know what? If it really becomes like a danger to him or to her, then you revise the choreography. Mm-hmm. God forbid. You know, and like, if you think about it, I mean, Disney is definitely one of the biggest proponents of underlying fat phobia. Yes. Because the only fat characters are men and comedic relief or a witch.
100%.
Like, you never see a cute little chubby female girl. You see LeFou and Iago and Genie and, you know, I could list
Ursula.
Lord knows how many men. Olaf, even.
Yeah, I actually saw Ryan Redmond as Olaf. And I was like, yeah, this is a comedic relief role, but like, how incredibly empowering to see someone my size on Broadway in a Disney show.
In a part that had nothing to do with size.
100%.
Nothing to do with her body. And I loved that. So I would love for Disney to give me some sort of character that has nothing to do with weight. And she just happens to have a little bit, like Moana.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting there with Moana. Moana was starting to be built like a Polynesian woman. She was still a little bit on the small side. But we're getting there. And then you look in the Disney parks and their Moanas of the Disney parks are still very, very small. So that's my dream, is to be able to see myself in Disney. Like I just watched so much Disney yesterday. I watched Aladdin and Into the Woods, the Disney remakes. And they were great, but I was just like, I still don't see myself.
Yeah.
Which thing? So I try and find myself in other ways. I'm like, oh, she's a confident girl. Oh, she don't need no man. You know, oh, she's a little bit plain. And so like that would be my goal. I mean,
yeah.
I do, and that's what sucks, is that I haven't even like allowed myself to really think about like what roles I would love to see, because at the end of the day, any of them.
Yeah.
I don't care. Just give me, when I am running backstage at a show and I'm dressing all these beautiful women, like if one could be close to my size, I think that would do wonders for my mental health. Cause mm-hmm. when I'm dressing all these tiny ass girls as beautiful, and I know, I mean, they're working hard. They take care of their bodies. You know, mm-hmm. it's not without merit. But I'm just kind of like, and then you complain about how fat you feel or how unflattering this costume is. And I'm just like, oh, what I would give.
I know.
To have one person there who kind of understands.
I mean, I think that kind of brings us to like, what are these microaggressions that people don't realize they're doing, and can they stop? Like, it would be easy. Be cognizant of who you're around. If you're straight size and listening to this, like, before you say something pejorative about fat bodies or your own body or feeling fat, look at who's around you. And if maybe there's someone who's bigger than you, don't say it in front of them. Because like, I know you think it's just about you, and it is in your mind. But like, when you say it, you put it into the world. And when you say it in front of someone who's fatter than you, then you're just like implicitly demeaning them.
Yeah. Well, and it could, I mean, like I said before, saying you feel bloated or you feel sluggish rolls off my back, and I don't even think twice about it, because
100%.
I absolutely know what feeling you're talking about. Great. You had too much Chipotle at lunch and now we're stringing you up in a corset. Like, that happened to Phantom all the time because their costumes are so tight and like,
oh,
you have
God.
To get that specific silhouette of the 1800s. So they're not wearing corsets per se, but they're wearing costumes with boning.
Mm-hmm.
They're really heavy and a lot of petticoats.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if they always had to be cognizant on two show days of like what they were eating, and like,
yeah,
even certain types of vegetables made them feel bloated and gassy.
It does.
And it was one of those things where they were like, so I will say, whenever you're going into a costume fitting at the beginning of a show, it's your first costume fitting, never go on an empty stomach.
Yeah.
Always eat a normal, sustainable amount. Because you will never do a show on an empty stomach.
Yeah.
If you do, you will die. So why would you ever go into a fitting on an empty stomach to feel skinnier, only to have your first day of run throughs and then being like, why does none of your costumes fit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so go in with that little extra bloat. Like, if you drink coffee with milk every morning, even though milk gives you a little bit of a bloat like mine does,
mm-hmm.
like, do that, because that way you'll know your body at its biggest. And if your costume just happens to hang a little bit looser around like your stomach, that's great for everybody.
Yeah.
It's not going to change the silhouette of the costume.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to make you feel more comfortable in the long run. And then you will never hear those microaggressions of like, oh, so-and-so gained weight between their fittings or whatever. Oh, I can't get their costume on now or whatever.
Right.
Because I've totally heard people say that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I'm like, and then like, you know, after we come back, whenever we come back to Broadway, everybody's bodies are going to have gone through a pandemic. They are not... You know, nobody has been doing the caliber of physical movement that they were doing eight times a week before this.
Mm-hmm.
So these Broadway athletes are coming back with softer, more lived-in bodies, which is great. And we love them regardless. Mm-hmm. It does not discount from the talent that they were putting into these parts when they were a size smaller or whatever. But I just know because most of the supervisors and designers on Broadway are very old and it's an old mindset. Uh-huh. They are going to complain all the time. And that's what's so frustrating. They're going to complain about, oh, so-and-so added weight. Now we have to put a panel in the back of their dress. Like, oh, no.
And it's so much about blame for your body. That's the thing, too, with, like, feeling like you need to apologize for not fitting into the costumes or you need to apologize that you're fitting. Like, I feel like this feeling of needing to apologize has always been so present for me as an actor in everything costume-related. And, like, at the end of the day, like, this body was cast. This body needs to be costumed, and I'm not going to apologize for that anymore.
That's a great way. If just saying in your mind that little mantra of like, this body was cast, this body is good enough to be costumed, is so important. And I think it also is not rude if somebody is making comments about your body. You don't have to be like, hey, don't do that. But you can be like, I would rather not know my, some women do not want to know their measurements. Mm-hmm. Like just say, while you're taking my measurements, if you could not say them aloud, that would be great.
Yeah, it's the same thing as like going on the scale backwards at the doctor.
Yeah, or like if you're talking about my body while I'm there, I would love to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and like saying things like that will just kind of make someone flip a switch that they didn't realize was turned off because they don't.
For sure.
They do this a million times and you don't think about it a lot of the time. It comes down to being an open communicator and trusting that your wardrobe team is there for the same, you know, outcome, which is to make you have a successful show in every sense of the capacity. So if you are uncomfortable with the undergarments you were given, the costume you are in, the places that you're changing, if you're changing into public of an environment that you're not comfortable with, don't sit there and let it fester. Don't have those side conversations with your actor. Like, trust that your dresser is going to take care of you. And I will say, not every dresser is perfect. You know, I have worked with some not so great dressers. If you feel uncomfortable talking to your dresser, talk to the wardrobe supervisor. If that still feels uncomfortable, that's what stage management is for. And it sucks that you have to be the advocate and like, you have to find those avenues. I get that. Mm-hmm. I get that taking that extra step among all the other things you're doing as an actor kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. But if you can do that early on in the process, that's going to allow like the hell that is Tech Week, the insanity that is running a show 8 shows a week for Lord knows how long, so much better. And I think if you can also create those relationships with your dresser and remember that they don't work for you, reminder that they work for the production and they are doing their best at their job and their job requires a lot that you don't ever see.
Yeah.
And the kindness that you extend to them will always come back to you in tenfold. So if you're like, oh, I can't wear these undergarments, somebody's gonna be like, well, bitch, suck it up.
Right.
As opposed to being like, hey, these undergarments are uncomfortable or I'm not really used to wearing, because like, I know I keep saying undergarments, but that is what so much of it comes back to.
Yeah.
Shapewear, bras, underwear, for some reason, that is where some of the biggest bane of our existence is, is from, you know, the foundation up. And that just goes back to being a nice human. You don't have to be fat to be able to, you know, to ask for these things.
Yeah.
You can be whatever size and whatever gender you are. And the more kindness you extend to your wardrobe dresser, the more they will advocate for you. Mm-hmm. Like I've had some of the most amazing relationships with like that have become some of my closest friends post shows. And I know so much about them. Like the fact that I could walk into a store and dress them without even thinking twice mm-hmm. says how much I know about their body. And they will know a lot about your body. So trusting that they're going to respect everything they know and they're not going to bat an eyelash at a back roll or at cellulite or stretch marks or whatever. Yeah. They just want to make sure that you feel like you're not wearing clothes.
Right.
Because the more comfortable you are in your clothes and the more you advocate for like, I get that this might look good, but this feels uncomfortable. Therefore, I am not able to do my job. Mm-hmm. Just saying those simple words will make your life so much better. Don't suck it up. I mean, don't be a diva about it. And it's a fine. You got to find the middle of that teeter-totter. But don't be afraid to advocate and be like, I feel like I can't do my job successfully because it is your job in this costume.
Yeah.
And that's okay. as long as you're not asking them to change the entire costume, if you're just asking them to maybe not make it quite that tight, or maybe give you, if you like Spanx or spandex and that's what you want underneath, advocate for that. Don't expect them to give you Spanx, because sometimes they won't, unless it affects the line of the costume, which some period shows you do need the Spanx to create that specific silhouette. Sometimes they just won't think to give it to you. So if that's something you want, ask for it. And that's fine. They're not going to care.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes actors can be so afraid to upset the system.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot to get an actor fired. Like, you have to be a really, really nasty person to get fired. And even then, sometimes you don't get fired. And they might call you a diva behind your back, but if you are still killing them with kindness, they're not going to care. They're going to go from calling you a diva to saying she's particular. She's nice, but she's particular. And there's nothing wrong with that. I have plenty of actors who are particular about certain things. And I'm like, if you're nice to me when you ask for it and you are understanding if, like, I forget the first time, great. I could care less. I will give you only the green Skittles if you say please, you know? So, yeah, it's all about the conversation and kindness and grace for each other. Because I would also say your dressers are never, I mean, all the dressers I know are about my size. Some are in better shape than I am. Some are taller than I am. Most dressers are a little bit on the softer side. So they're going to understand your body dysmorphia and your discomfort with your body better than maybe some of your actors or the designers or the directors will. So.
That's awesome. I always feel so, like, much safer and more comforted when the person taking my measurements is, like, a little on the bigger side, which is, you know, I mean, it's like, it's definitely like stereotyping, but it's also like feels good to, and like, I just trust them a little more, not to make a comment or not to be mad at me, or, you know what I mean?
And you don't have to. You don't have to, like, think in your brain, God, I hope they don't say anything. I have totally had actors walk into fittings and be like, hi, so nice to meet you. I have this one thing, which is where I would rather, if you have any discussions about the shape of my body, the size of my measurements, anything like that, if you would have that when I'm not in the room.
Yeah.
Because eating disorders run rampant.
Oh, yes.
In musical theater,
that's,
or in theater.
That's a whole other episode.
And you know, and so we kind of will default, and sometimes, especially if there are multiple people in the fitting room, you'll just automatically say something and you don't mean to. And you're just like, oh, okay. I don't think those pants are going to fit her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you just remind them that you're like, hey, I would rather you not discuss my physical body and the way my body is shaped.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you wouldn't discuss anything that I can't change in 5 minutes about myself, that would be awesome. Like, and you just phrase it in a very kind, but not apologetic, like, this is my boundary that I am setting with you, and ask that they respect it, they will. They're, you know, they might talk about it later, be like, oh, that was kind of weird, and like, did we mention this? But like, at the end of the day, they're not going to be like, ugh, she didn't let us talk about her body. No, nobody's going to care.
Yeah.
But you cannot expect somebody to not to, because old habits are hard to fix.
Right.
So advocating for yourself and finding a kind way to say that, but stating your boundaries and not just trusting that because they're curvy, they might not say something about your body. Sometimes when you're curvy, you feel like you have the right to say something about somebody's body because your body looks that way. Like, well, I can call her fat because I'm fat, kind of thing.
Right.
You know, so I would not put trust into anything being the norm.
Yeah.
I would just say, always state your boundaries. It's like how we're kind of getting into this realm of, like, stating your pronouns if that's something you really want.
Yeah.
It's that same thing. It's just stating boundaries. And I think that's super important.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having this conversation. Before we go, do you have anything to plug or anything you want to share with us, like your social media or anything like that?
Yeah. Well, I will plug. I do have my own podcast, and our podcast is all about technical theater. It's called Working in the Wings. You can find it on wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, all that jazz. And we have, I believe we have 10 episodes up right now. We have not put anything up since the quarantine started last March. But please give those a listen if you're curious about any aspect of technical theater. We've covered so many of them and interviewed some, like, really cool, like, in our field, we kind of fangirled over We interviewed the scenic designer of Moulin Rouge. We interviewed the ASM for Hadestown. We interviewed Jesse Eisenberg after he wrote a play that I had worked on off Broadway.
Oh my goodness.
We interviewed Teal Dvornik, who is the backstage blonde on Instagram, if you're familiar with her. She is a great person to look up to in the Broadway community. My social media, if y'all want to follow me, you're welcome to. It's about as chaotic as 2020 was. but it's just at Mallory Kidd. But I'm a big advocate in education. So if you have any questions, I'm an open book and I'm happy to answer any questions. But I don't know how much content you'll get from me until theater is back. Then I do post a lot about what I do and my work and stuff like that.
Awesome.
I think it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for everything. This was a great conversation, and I wish you all the best in theater coming back as soon as possible.
I know, so soon. I'm so excited. And thank you. And I'm so excited to see the community that we're coming back to, because I think there have been a lot of great conversations happening in these past
12
months or whatever. Yeah.
Amen. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank all you, right, everyone. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening to More Than Tracy Turnblad. And I hope you have an awesome day. If you liked what you heard today, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. That helps us so much. Also, spread the word of mouth, social media, whatever you want is great. And follow More Than Tracy Turnblad on social media at More Than Tracy T on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok.